All right. Call us to order and we'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the accounts payable. That'd be cycle date 4-1 through 4-5 and $204,964.07, noting the county manager's review and approve such.
Second.
Discussion, items of note?
I'll just tell you that this AP includes some Elon credit cards payments, but it was a special AP so that the clerk's office could get a payment to the secretary of, well, the Department of Treasury for collections that were made here. But it did include some other payments. There is our Yampa Valley Electric bill in there for $22,000. There's not much in that AP list.
$22,000 total?
For a month, yes.
Yeah,
for
so all, I mean, that includes the airport and everything, so.
Yes, I believe it does.
Yeah. We're not spending $100,000 a month at the airport?
Well, no, it's $1.5
million.
Okay. Yeah, which is a little over $100,000.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Yesterday we had updates from the county manager and legal, as well as the deputy county manager, human services, the building department, the planning department, and the treasurer.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve consent agenda items A and B.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, it's 10:45, so we'll go ahead and open public comment. If you want to come on up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Us?
Are you guys together?
Yes.
Okay, come on up.
Now I'm really interested.
Yeah, what's going on around here?
Eric had me wondering, but now.
Why I'm here? Well, you know a little bit about this.
So just go ahead and introduce yourselves, and then tell us what you've got to say.
Well, I'm Erica Hewitt, and I'm from Steubert Architectural, but actually I'm here today as the Historic Preservation Consultant to the City of Steamboat Springs, and I'm here along with...
I'm Emily Katzman. I'm the Executive Director of Historic Rock County.
Nice
and
to meet
actually,
you.
Yeah, I've never met you before, so it's nice to meet you.
I'm going to pass this up, guys. We are here to talk to you about This Place Matters campaign, which is part of Preservation Month.
So May is Historic Preservation Month. It's been an initiative of the National Trust for Historic Preservation since the 1970s. And in the past, we have celebrated a little bit half-heartedly, but this year we've managed to group together Main Street Steamboat, which at its heart is a historic preservation organization, Historic Rock County, Charter Pioneers Museum, and the city's Historic Preservation Commission. So we're joining forces to make a bit of a splash, and the whole purpose of the initiative is to help call attention to our community's historic resources, build and cultivate community pride around our built environment and all the places that we live, work, and play in, and to also use it as an educational tool to just help let people know about historic preservation and the cultural and social benefits of it. And so one of our major initiatives is going to be a social media campaign called This Place Matters. Erica, do you want to jump in?
Sure. This Place Matters was a campaign started by the National Historic Trust. So we're sort of, and they have it out there for people to grab onto and sort of make it their own. And so we are doing that here. We've made these posters that we've incorporated the city's logo and our county's logo. And this is what we're encouraging everyone to hold up. Take this sign to a place within the city or county that is important to them, a place that matters. We're not putting any restrictions on it. I think the campaign will say 50 years or older if you're going for historic buildings, but we just want to see what matters to people in this community and sort of take this and use that. And so during the month of May, we want to have this big campaign that will start with First Friday Art Walk, and that everyone will get these. We'll have one of these in the newspaper. We'll have these posters up around town at the First Friday Art Walk places for people to grab. But in order to advertise that, we're coming to you guys. We've gone to City Council. This is going to City and County and saying, can we see if you guys would be willing to participate in this, pick a place that matters to you, maybe give us a sentence or two on why that place matters, take a picture, and we'll use that as advertising to promote for the month of May.
Yeah, with any social media campaign, we need, you know, influential people to sort of help get us started, and then hopefully the general public.
Well, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah, Doug and Tim's Facebook page probably won't be that.
So the beauty of it,
my
is
Facebook
like,
page is pretty active.
Yours.
We're asking for your help, but if you're on board, you know, we can coordinate a time to take a photo of you, or if you're into taking selfies, you can do it. You can do it at your own historic property.
Doug, can I borrow your selfie stick?
That'd be good.
Anyway, we want to make it as easy for you as possible. You know, it can be a really well-known building like this beautiful historic courthouse that you work in, or it could be somewhere a little bit more obscure. But just a photo of you with a sign saying this place matters. Honestly, I personally don't even care if it's a historic place. I think it'll be really interesting data to see what places are important to people. Mm-hmm. So we'll consider it an experiment. But we want to make it as easy for you as possible if you agree to get on board. But we're also working with other nonprofits and people who are located in historic buildings just to help cultivate awareness and pride for our historic places.
Well, I think for the courthouse would be the
obvious
thing
for
us.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Do you want us to either help you?
12:15?
I think we could probably just ask Helena to take a picture, don't
we? Yeah. As soon as we get done here, we'll run out there.
We can do that.
Okay.
Give us a sign.
Yep. We'll ask you a couple if you want to pass around, if there's anyone else. Tom wants to, there's a barn you drive by every day at work you like, take a picture.
Do you want your own sign?
I'm going to take a picture. Emily
Are
knows
you out now?
Emily knows about my barn. Nice. I'm going to take a picture of my barn.
Yeah, I think that'd be perfect.
Yeah, do it.
It's actually got some cool history to it. It used to be a dairy barn. We still have some of the original dairy stanchions set up in it. And it said, you know, that barn's got to be at least 80, 90 years old. So.
Oh, really cool.
And it's still a working barn.
Yep, still. Yep.
Nice.
Well, houses my wife's horse habit, but yeah.
This seems like a great campaign. I'm excited to see how it goes for you.
Yeah, and we have a lot of support from the paper, which is great. They're going to have some stories and putting the pictures out there and doing the full page ad with the pin drop. But and then if you guys get the picture and Helena wants to send it, Emily's email address is on there.
Helena knows how to get a hold of her.
Yeah.
That'd be great. And then while we have a few more minutes of your time, just to let you know about some other initiatives that we're taking, that we're doing in May, we have Dana Crawford coming up from Denver. Are you familiar with Dana? You might be.
Yeah, Crossings won the Dana Crawford Award.
Exactly.
A couple of years ago.
Exactly. So Dana Crawford is a developer, a preservation-minded developer, and she was the force behind the Larimer Square project.
I've seen this thing on Colorado Experience.
Exactly.
Her, yeah.
Exactly. And she recently won the I can't remember the name, the Governor's Citizenship Medal, which is the highest honor bestowed upon a citizen of Colorado. So she's been doing really good work. She was also behind the Union Station revitalization in downtown Denver. Anyway, comes with an amazing wealth of experience and knowledge, and so she's going to come up and speak at the Chief on the 20th of May. So hoping to get a lot of people there. If you're interested, please join us. And then the Tread of Pioneers is going to do a really cool ongoing exhibit using the photos from This Place Matters. So the kind of most interesting photos they'll put into their exhibit space for a couple of months and just have a preservation-related exhibit. So, yeah.
I'm going to get a picture of the ice hoist out there between Abbott and Deponis.
Oh, cool. I'm not even familiar with that.
Really? So if you're driving south out of Yamba, about 2 or 3 miles south on the left-hand side on the Redmond's property. Uh-huh. There's this old...
The lettuce.
There's a big depression in the ground there, and that's where when they had the lettuce boom, they had big lettuce sheds built there. They're long gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But in the depression, they filled it up with water before winter, and then it froze, and then they saw these big blocks of ice out of that pond, that man-made pond, and then there, what's still there is this big set of wooden works with pulleys and sleds, and that's they'd load the ice blocks onto that, and then load them onto the it's right next to the railroad tracks, put them into the railroad cars to refrigerate the lettuce, so they shipped it back. It's still, I mean, it's not obviously not operational anymore, but it's still mostly intact.
Wow.
Pretty cool looking thing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
You're going to have to revitalize your Facebook page, Tim. All these pictures.
He's going viral.
It won't be revitalizing, it'll be vitalizing.
Well, thank
Wonderful.
You.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And then my personal plug is an exciting thing also in Preservation Month is the old YVA building is being awarded the state's highest preservation award at the Dana Crawford Award Ceremony.
That's great.
Yeah, that's in May as well. So,
yeah, great example of an adaptive reuse project. So we're excited that that project is getting some recognition on the state level.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a good job down there.
They did. Well, thank you very
Wonderful.
Much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to us and helping out with the program.
Absolutely.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Same time, same place.
I know, actually, I have to go meet with Tara.
All right, have fun.
Thanks, see you
guys. Come on up.
We're done.
Well, evidently, we're not having...
Evidently.
Yes.
So. We were here just in case.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thanks for your time. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Good.
So we are taking a look at a special event liquor license for the Hayden Valley PTO Health and Wellness Team.
I guess I have all my investigation reports except for fire in, which is not abnormal.
Where is this being held at again?
The Hayden Granary.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
In the county part.
Yep.
I don't have any questions. Do you guys have questions? Do you have information about the event that you need to share with us?
No. They did this last year, so just another round.
Madam Chair, I move we approve. Authorize the your signature on a special event liquor license for the Hayden Valley PTO Health and Wellness Team for an event to be held at Hayden Greenery at 198 East Lincoln Avenue in Hayden, Colorado, from 4 p.m. to 10:30 p.m.
Second.
Sorry, you can fill in the rest.
It's okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 So I went to my forest people breakfast this morning.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
I was good. We talked about this and that. Sam Parsons said, man, you should hear what those fire chiefs are saying about you.
Oh, Tim.
No surprises there.
We always had
college,
but never for 4-H. All right, so we are looking at the InDigital 911 service and software license agreement.
Yes, so we presented this at the monthly update last week, and unfortunately, as we briefed then, is Jason and Carrie would normally be here, but they're both out of town. Jason's on a pre-planned vacation, and Carrie's at some training for our EOC and Type 4 team. But basically, we the comm center is looking to extend our text to 911, and we need to provide a vendor to do that. What we briefed last week is there were three providers in the area. The comm center received two quotes. The first one was from TCS Comtech, and the second one was from InDigital. They spoke to both of them, and InDigital's cost was significantly lower than Comtech. The total cost for InDigital is about $4,500 as a non-recurring fee for setup, and then $1,200 annual service cost per year after that. The reasons why, obviously, we're continuing with Text 911, the primary reason for most counties across the country for doing it are really as a safety measure, where you may have individuals that either are unable to speak or don't want to speak because of the situation that they're in, so they can send a 911 message without either, despite their disability, or for the safety reasons, not want to give the location away. The other feature that is more unique to particularly rural areas is some of our dead spots with cell phone coverage, and texts oftentimes go through better than phone calls will. So the text 911 is a critical service, I think, for the county. We have to put this in as a supplemental. We still think that we may be able to cover everything within our operating budget, but don't know for sure. So we may not actually incur the extra cost. It depends on how our operating budget plays out the rest of the year. The recurring cost we will have in our budget.
And the $4,500 is controllable.
Correct.
Right, yeah.
Correct.
I don't have any questions.
Had a good discussion on this earlier.
Absolutely.
Madam Chair, I move to authorize your signature on the InDigital 911 service and software license agreement to enable the Rock County Emergency Communication Center to continue to offer text to 911 as an available service to our citizens and guests.
Second.
Any other discussion?
Well, the only thing I forgot to mention, and since you already approved it, it's no big deal, but we do have the contractor that was reviewed and approved by the attorney's office as well.
And I guess my motion should have included this may require a
supplemental
budget.
Well, I have a question about that because I have a supplemental budget sitting right here.
That's what needs will need to be.
So I have your motion approved the supplemental budget too. Noting that it's not a resolution, it's just a realignment of expenditures to approve a project.
So moved.
And then are you seconding
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Do you have that document to sign or not yet?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to... So we don't think Sheriff is coming?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I haven't heard from him.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, we are here for consideration by the Board of County Commissioners to approve the HGAC Cooperative Purchasing Program purchase and approve the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to Braun Northwest, Inc. for the purchase of one new model year 2019 North Star 143-5 prisoner transport on a Ford F-350 4x4 diesel chassis per the specifications dated 10-22-18 in the amount of $128,144. The budget for this vehicle is $125,000, and the supplemental budget required of $3,144, the sheriff has said will come out of his predictive positive variance 2019 at the end of the year. The Route County Motor Pool is replacing the current prisoner transport van as it has reached the end of serviceable life. Due to current federal and state regulations that mandate separation of prisoners during transport by age and gender, the transport vehicle requires several compartments. Sheriff Wiggins has met with Braun Northwest at several law enforcement conventions and determined that this vehicle will best serve the needs of Route County, as well as enabling the sheriff's office to cooperate with surrounding Colorado counties to facilitate prisoner transport across the state. So the HGAC is a cooperative purchasing group that...
It's not the state.
It's not the state. It's for all government entities, though. And so we were able to utilize that, as well as our Ford identification number that we purchase all our Ford vehicles through to save on the F-350 chassis. So we saved some money there. And these are the list of options that I've included that this vehicle will be pretty much spec'd out. We won't have to add too much to it at all once we pick it up. And so this does, this purchase adheres to the purchasing policy and procedure cited in the Route County Purchasing Manual 6th Edition, Section 6.4, Cooperative Purchases. As to the following criteria, it is sometimes beneficial to group county requirements and the like requirements of other cities, counties, and agencies. This practice usually results in lower purchase, as this did. Any questions?
I have a question. Can, on the list of options, there's travel for $730 from Denver to Portland.
That is for the sheriff. He had three different options, and he chose the one. You need to expect the vehicle before it ships to make sure it's to the specification and that's where it's being manufactured.
So the sheriff is flying to Portland to examine this vehicle?
Yes.
What does it mean? There's travel for pre-construction meeting, parentheses, two, and final inspection, one. Does that mean three trips?
I think the pre-construction meeting will be him, the salesman, coming here. Okay. And then the final inspection is for Sheriff Wiggins to go and inspect it before it gets shipped. Which is a good thing to do. You know, if there's anything that happens during transit, even though it is FOB, Route County, it still is important to look at it as it leaves the factory. This is being custom built.
And it is being delivered then?
Yes.
FOB here?
FOB. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And originally the budget was $125, and but we would have had to include a lot of these, the grill, a lot of these items right here that are specified. So actually ended up being cheaper in the long run because we didn't have to spend all this extra money.
Less expensive.
Less expensive, yeah, as you're saying. Nothing cheap about this vehicle.
What is end of serviceable life? Do we have a mileage limitation on this vehicle?
So this will be a diesel engine, so we're expecting to get over 200,000 miles and hopefully be able to transfer the box to a different chassis at that point.
And how much do we drive these vehicles in a year?
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that we've had the last van for 10 years, and it has 80,000.
Yeah, that's probably 90,000 miles. Not a fair question.
Yeah.
Because nobody liked driving it. Nobody liked it.
How are they transporting prisoners if they're living in
that van? They were using smaller vehicles,
okay.
But one prisoner or two max at the time.
Right.
So
Training with other entities.
Entities. Yeah, and I think they paid them.
Yeah, they had to pay a transport company.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be able to do this themselves now, and hopefully.
I didn't know. I guess I had been left with the impression that that was just a kind of an informal trading operation that we engaged in when we were asking other entities to transport our prisoners. That was part of the reason we were buying this, is that we'd be able to kind of...
We can participate.
Participate in that.
Yeah.
So
yes.
We'll get paid when we
transport. We should be able to bring in some revenue with that.
Okay, fine.
You know, and also... It's just good citizenship. So,
when we discussed this before, I had asked a question about: Are we aware of whether there are other companies who make a similar vehicle at a lower price? I know that the process that we've gone through to determine that this is what is appropriate, but I guess I just have that question and was hoping you had done a little research to that end.
I did, and I included that in the documents I submitted.
Okay, so maybe I just wasn't aware that that's what it was.
I went on GovSpend and I looked at what other counties have been doing, and you know, it's not apples to apples,
right?
You know, the Chevy vehicle, it's 60,000 or close to 55,000. Excuse me. Is basically just like a van. It's not anything, it's not where you can have these separate cages and protect your officers, while they're transporting from the air and the different things that Sheriff Wiggins is trying to do here, because there are a lot of airborne diseases now.
And I also got some quotes from Ford as well, and it was, by the time we added the four-wheel drive, I'm sure that's not four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
So it keeps adding up. And then I looked at some other companies that make products very similar to this, and it was right around the same ballpark, anywhere from 150,000 to 100,000, 150,000.
Oh, and 100,000, I found one from a different company at 100,000, but it was a 2014 purchase, so the price of steel has definitely gone up since then, and it was bare bones. So, us getting the cooperative purchasing contract price of $110,000, I think is pretty good, considering
inflation. So the other one was how much?
$100,000 bare bones.
Wow.
And that was the 2014, or that was
2014.
So that gives me a little more confidence about the selection of this vehicle.
Okay. We did do some research on this.
I appreciate that.
So the delivery to Steamboat Springs, is it delivered on a larger truck, or are we going to get this thing with 1,400 miles on it?
No. I think it should be on the low boy.
Okay.
Yeah, delivered over here, so...
I don't.
But I will make sure that
you can fly up and go drive.
I was just going to say, if we're going to spend $700,
we've done that before.
If we're going to spend $730 to travel up there and then end up with a vehicle paying $2,000 for somebody to ship it back down there, just tell the sheriff to drive it back. He only needs a one-way ticket. So.
Maybe you can pick up some people that need to be dropped off.
Yeah, exactly. Make some money on that.
Right. Route.
Just have to make sure there's a tag on it before he does.
Yeah. Questions? I'm ready for a motion if you are. Have questions either.
It's his turn.
Yeah, Madam Sounds Chair, good. I move that we approve the HGAC Cooperative Purchasing Program purchase and approve your county manager's electronic signature on a purchase order to Braun Northwest Incorporated for the purchase of a new model year 2019 North Star 143-5 prisoner transport on a Ford F-350 4x4 diesel chassis per the specifications stated on 12-10-22-18 in the amount of $128,144.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we have Scott Kalman from Mount County Environmental Health and Cameron Hawkins from the Sustainability Council to give us some information on the Waste Diversion Strategic Plan. Yeah, Anne, are you joining us or no?
Come on up.
I'm just here in support, but I can.
These are more comfortable chairs. Come on.
And Majid is here as well. So you're looking for some feedback and then just acceptance of the plan? Is that?
Yeah, so okay. we talked about this before, and you know, when we started all this, we were thinking get approval of the plan from the City Council and the Brown County Commissioners. But really, you know, focusing on waste diversion and solid waste management is part of my job, according to the Environmental Health Core Services. And so I didn't really see, it didn't really make sense to me to ask for an approval. Like, it seemed like you guys should be informed about what's going on. Certainly we would like, you know, support and also feedback for some of these actions. And so it just seemed like better that we would ask for acceptance of the plan. And then with the city, it's a little different. I think that we need to ask for an approval of the plan there because they're going to have to commit resources that mm-hmm. otherwise would be doing something else. And so that's the difference. And it's kind of semantics, but you kind of get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I understand totally yeah. where you're coming from. And it seems like a good partnership to work with IBSC on, you know, we've discussed the importance of the county not taking on everything, but being right. able to work in partnership with organizations within the county to achieve some of these objectives. So
right, and they know that, you know, the city contains half the population of the county, and then also probably contributes, I'm guessing, 75% or 80% of the waste.
Mm-hmm. Almost certainly
with
yeah.
the visitors that we have, and so it is important to get the city to step up and be a partner and to recognize that. And so that's been one of the things that we've been trying to drive home with them.
That's great.
So do you want to just give them an update, like what we've done so far and where
yeah,
we're at?
For sure.
Yeah,
so I think Scott included this little PowerPoint in your plan. Mm-hmm. This is actually what I presented to City Council.
So actually we have
we
have the plan. I don't okay. think we have a PowerPoint.
That's
okay.
my fault.
That's okay. okay. I'm just going to talk through this briefly. It just gives an update, and all of this is in, well, actually not the task force updates. But since you've seen the strategic plan, I'll just jump to updates on the task force groups. So just to kind of give you an idea of where we are with the implementation of the strategic plan. So the strategic plan was completed in March, I think, where we got it back from the designer and everything and started to promote it. And since January, we've been meeting with the
different... So how come that's not listed in here, who the author of this is?
It's on the front, the Yampa Valley Sustainability Council.
So that's the author?
Well, we, yes.
Contracted with whoever to do this?
So what she's talking about
yeah.
is YBSC wrote the plan and then sent it off to a formatter to format the document.
Okay.
Great.
So it wasn't there wasn't an outside consultant
yeah.
or anybody outside working on it.
They just put it all together to make it look nice, basically.
Okay.
So that
was actually on bottom of page 22. It says special thanks to EcoCycle and
yep.
Souder Miller and Associates for assistance on this report.
Yep. So they helped. We had a waste diversion specialist from EcoCycle and then Wynn Kalman, who was involved in the materials management working group with developing the strategic plan. They were really integral pieces in helping us kind of make sure that we were getting the right information and asking the right questions from the community as we were going through this process.
And Wynn also did the waste diversion study at
right.
the landfill.
At the landfill, so she had some
yeah.
background knowledge.
But the priorities are kind of really community-driven.
Right, exactly, yeah. The whole plan was community-driven. And so the thought throughout this process was that the priorities that we came up with were going to be the basis for the implementation of the strategic plan. And so from the plan, we've developed six task force groups, one for each of the six priorities that were identified. And we've started to meet with those groups to identify a goal within the year to be completed that works towards the action items identified within the strategic plan. And so I'm just going to go through each of the task force groups and tell you kind of where each one is currently and what they've decided to work on if they've identified a project.
Will you identify sort of broadly who's participating in those groups? Not necessarily specific people, but just...
Yes. Yeah. Do you want me to do that as I go through?
Yeah, that would be good.
So the curbside recycling group is having its first meeting actually this Thursday. So I don't have too much to report on that group yet. But we've got the haulers involved in that group. We've got someone from Stagecoach HOA involved in that group. We've got somebody from an HOA on the mountain involved in that group. We've got, looking at you, I don't know why, I don't remember who
the
else
city.
Quite yet. The city, I think, is, we have Julie Baxter from the city involved in that group. But I'll know more for sure after we meet on Thursday. But those people are definitely kind of key stakeholders in that process. And a big thing that's been identified for the curbside recycling group is how do we make recycling more accessible to, we've had a lot of interest from Stagecoach and those communities out in the Oak Creek area. And so people wanting, they have the green machines, but we're not sure that the green machines are quite as effective. So we're actually, on a side note, we're going to be looking at that. Gina and I are going to be looking to see how do we make those green machines more effective. And then,
so there's a lot of contamination.
Yeah.
And those are funded by the county through tipping fees. And so I think that there's some improvements that we can make.
Yeah, some big opportunities there.
And they also, especially particularly in Oak Creek, they get filled.
Filled like the day that they're set out.
So one and a half gets filled up pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah.
How
yeah.
frequently are they set
Once
out?
A month.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
When we used to live in Stagecoach, I used
so
to.
So I guess I wasn't aware of that problem, but there's a lot of contamination.
There's a lot of contamination.
And so that's part of the education effort and also... part of the, you know, there's a lot of these different groups, and that touches on a couple different groups.
Yeah, and there's...
So we'll be looking at that.
There's a lot of overlap between these groups, and so actually tomorrow we're going to have a meeting with all of the task force groups just to kind of brainstorm as a group and make sure that, you know, we're not overlapping too much.
So there's more contamination in the green machines than there is in the curbside recycling?
Well, I can't say for sure because we don't have the data to show that. But from what I've heard, the green machines are highly contaminated, and so we're going to try and see how we can maybe work on that a little bit.
Is curbside available in all of the city, in all of Steamboat Springs?
In the city, yes. Only to single family and duplexes, but not to multifamily. And so that gets to... The other thing that the curbside group will likely, just based on the strategic plan, will likely start looking at is how do we expand it to multifamily units and HOAs and condos and things like that to recycle. But like I said, this group hasn't started meeting yet, so we'll know more once they've actually met.
So it's not required for multifamily?
It's not required at the moment.
What's required is that the hauler provide that service within downtown. That's what the current ordinance says. The current ordinance is something that, like Cameron said, we're going to be looking at. It's a little dated. There's also requirements in that ordinance that aren't being fulfilled as far as tracking data and doing things like that. No one from the city is doing that. So that's part of what that group is going to do is what's reasonable and how can we get some of the other areas within the city limits involved. So, you know, One of the things that makes waste diversion more successful is volume. So if you get more volume, then it pays for itself better. And, you know, we struggle. We've talked about this before. How do you get it to pay for itself? And so that's one of the ways is deal with volume. So.
And do you have a sense of how of the multifamily units that are not required to have access to recycling, how many do you have it? Like I live in a multifamily unit, and we do have
that's
recycling.
Good. I think you're one of a minority.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not a lot.
I get a lot of calls from guests, from tourists, and also from locals that are asking where they can recycle because their condo complex doesn't have recycling. And so I think that, you know, will probably be one of the first steps is looking at who is recycling in multifamily units and how are they making it work, because mm-hmm. Space has been a concern, and just looking at that. So we'll know, we'll have some more information on that hopefully after this group starts meeting, and assuming that they choose to look at that as their project. So moving on to organics recycling, this group is composed of, we've got people from Elkstone, we've got Mark Berkeley from Innovative Ag, we've got, actually, this group has like 20 people that have been coming to this meeting pretty
Libby,
consistently.
Libby, CSU Extension.
Libby from CSU Extension. We have just several community members that are really interested in getting organics recycling back. We've got the haulers are involved in that conversation, especially Twin Enviro, because they have a compost, permanent compost facility. Those are kind of some of the key. Rick from the county has been going. Those are kind of the top key ones that stick out in my mind.
So what happens to the composting?
Well, we don't have composting.
I mean, what happens to Twin Enviro?
Well, they stuff goes out they the only...
they're taking biosolids. Right. And
it's mainly biosolids.
Pretty much.
What are biosolids?
It's the byproduct from the wastewater treatment facility. And stuff.
Okay. Yeah. But so they're not composting anymore? Like
no food waste.
Goes no there, food waste. They just put it in the landfill?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that what your question
is? Yeah, I guess... I mean, you can only fill a hole so full. Where does it go after you clean out the hole? Composting.
Well, there's an end product. You can sell it. So right now, Twin is only composting biosolids and maybe some yard waste. But once that breaks down, they're using it probably for land application there locally because there's a pretty big stigma against people putting composted biosolids on their yards.
Even though it's the same.
Even though it's the same, and actually, and oftentimes it's has quite a lot more nutrients in it. So right now that's what's happening. But if they were taking, and all the food scraps are just going to the landfill.
So again, back to the composting then. I mean, we can only compost what you can get rid of after it gets composted. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure I understand.
So you have a composted product that you need to sell or use.
My question is, so they're using it evidently on the at the landfill
site.
To cover up, you know, for long-term reclamation, evidently.
Yeah.
And when they used to do household
they were
compost,
selling
they
it.
Were selling
they were selling
it,
that right? in-product compost as a byproduct product.
And they, were selling and they had a market for it.
There is a market for it, but I don't think it was tapped fully.
I don't think that there was a lot of effort put into
marketing
to develop those
exactly.
markets. Yeah.
There's probably a market.
But there's a market. I mean, there's...
And we've seen successful operations
exactly.
elsewhere in the state that have successful.
Well, I was going to say, people go down to Home Depot and buy bags of compost materials, so there's clearly a market.
I was talking to one of the Pitkin County Commissioners, because they run their landfill and they have a composting operation there, and it actually makes money, right?
It's a very successful facility, and that's one thing that this organics recycling group has just recently finished surveying. I think they got answers from about 15 out of the 30 compost facilities in the state to look at what has been some of the barriers and what has made them successful. And it's provided some good insight, and Pitkin is obviously one of the facilities that has been very successful. So we're hoping that we can use that as we're looking towards moving towards a facility to help us know what might be successful. But the project that this group is working on is a feasibility study. And so the hope is that by the end of this year, we can kind of have an idea of what type of facility, you know, how much land we would need and what the costs would be to either start a new compost facility or use existing infrastructure to run a new compost facility.
And it could be that they look at anaerobic digestion.
Yeah, so we're looking at three types of composting. We're looking at windrow composting, which is just out in the open where there is still some methane that is emitted into the atmosphere. So that's just, you know, open composting where you have trucks or whatever that grind it up. And then we're looking at in vessel, which is composting in like a building, but it's not, the methane's not being captured and used for energy. And then we're looking at anaerobic digestion, which is an in-vessel facility as well, but the methane is actually captured and then used to you know, heat up the building or something like that. And so those are the three types of compost facilities that composting that we're going to be looking at in the feasibility study. And then from there, we should have, you know, costs for each. We should have, you know, the benefits and the challenges for each, and to kind of see what is best for our community. I've been working with a graduate student from Western Colorado State University on a organics study for the county, and we've gotten some good data on how much food waste is being generated, and so that'll be used in the feasibility study as well. So the next group is the Business Waste Diversion Group, and this group is being led by Lisa Popovich from Main Street Steamboat. And we've got some restaurant owners downtown in this group. We've got some people from CMC in this group. We've got a couple of community members involved in this group. We've got Jim Cook, whom I don't know if you're familiar with. He's involved in this group. And a couple other people that are escaping my mind. But the project that this group is working on is going to be surveying. We're going to start with just our restaurants and retailers and service providers in the strictly like downtown Steamboat area to look at what are their barriers to recycling, composting, and just waste disposal in general. And then we're hoping to expand that to the entire county so that we can kind of get a better idea of what are some of the challenges that these businesses are having. And then from there, we'll be able to identify what are some of the steps that this group can take to help mitigate those and work with businesses to help them increase waste diversion. And actually something that's exciting that came out of Actually, I think it came out of the organic recycling group, is there's a group of restaurants downtown that are really excited and passionate about waste diversion, and they're starting their own group to start talking about this on a restaurant level. So we haven't met yet, but that's exciting, something that's come out of these.
And are you looking at food waste from restaurants as well?
Yeah, so all types of waste. Yeah. So food waste, plastic waste, I don't know, all waste streams. So the next group is the construction and demolition group. And this group, we have several building. We've got residential construction representatives. We've got CalCon, so commercial construction representatives. We've got somebody, Scott Slamel from the city, who does the stormwater inspections for construction sites. We've got Jen from Twin Enviro. We've got a couple other people that are escaping my mind. But for this group, for the construction demolition group, and this group is still trying to identify what their project is going to be, but data has obviously been a big thing that's missing. And so we've started to collect data from some of the actually Gerber Behrend is participating in this as well. And so we're starting to collect data from Gerber Behrend and from Fair and Square, or is Ron Davies with Fair and Square?
From who first you
said? Is Ron Davies Fair and Square.
Gerber
Behrend and Fair and Square. So they're providing data for us currently on the amount of waste that's being disposed of at construction sites. So
it's a lot.
Yeah. Yes. And so we can start to get an idea, because we have no idea. You know, obviously infrastructure is huge for disposing of construction debris. And so in order for us to look at what are some realistic goals for diversion of construction and demolition debris.
I wouldn't think that data would be that hard to come by.
It hasn't been. We just have to ask for it. So we're starting to try and ask for it.
These guys have a pretty good idea.
They do.
Been an average size house, how many 30 roll-offs they're going to use.
Exactly.
And what kinds of things do you look at with that? I mean, I assume there's some reuse you can look at, but not everything can.
So we're looking at a couple of materials. We're looking at scrap metal. These are like the ones that have the biggest opportunity and we have infrastructure for here locally. So scrap metal, just basic single stream recycling, wood, cardboard, and aggregates. So like rock, things like that. And so those are kind of the five main materials that we're focusing on. And I think this group is, you know, maybe at some point hoping to get some sort of requirement or something where, you know, if you're building over a certain number of square feet, then this amount of material needs to be diverted, or you're required to have certain bins for certain materials on site. We're definitely not there yet, but that seems to be what the people in this group are interested in looking at. So that's
kind of... Would require what?
Well, we're not. I mean,
no one's requiring anything yet.
Nobody's requiring anything. It's just a conversation, and so we're hoping that this data can help us know, see what are some of the missing infrastructure pieces. And I mean, right now we have the infrastructure to take these materials, but do we have the infrastructure to take the volume of materials that we would get? And so the data is really important for that. And so that's kind of where the starting point is.
I mean, to the extent you can incentivize builders to have a steel dumpster on site.
No, I understand that.
Yeah. And there's,
I mean, again, I'm sure that you said it right. These guys already know how to pinch the penny.
Yeah.
They're already
yeah.
pinching the penny pretty hard. And that, mm-hmm. you know, that's just extra dollars.
Yeah, but you know, for them, it's also a value proposition of how much time yeah. or how much labor are they going to set
aside.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's just cheaper to throw out the 30-yard dumpster
for sure.
the day.
And there's some initiatives at the state level to try and divert more construction demolition debris from the landfill, because we all know it's really heavy material and it is taking up a lot of space and many landfills throughout the state. And so there might be some, we've been in touch with the state, and there might be some incentives coming down the line to help construction companies.
Just a side note, years ago there was a guy that was ranching out up in Wyoming, and he had some really acidic soil, and he was taking drywall scraps for free and disking it into the ground.
Interesting. That's
great. Because it's all biodegradable. I mean, drywall is pretty inert stuff.
Yeah.
It's just paper and gypsum.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like you have some construction professionals participating in that.
Oh, that group is like primarily construction professionals, and I am definitely not. That is not my strength. So I am sitting there like taking notes, you know. And actually, one of the things that is great about each of these groups is except for the education and outreach or education events group, is we have somebody that's not from YVSC leading each of these groups. And so this man named Glenn Lemery, I don't know if you know him, but he is leading the construction demolition
group. What's his name?
Glenn Lemery. I just met him recently. I cannot tell you his background in full detail, but I'm excited to have him. He's retired, and he's excited to lead this group. So that's kind of the model we're trying to have buy-in from stakeholders in the community and people facilitating. So the next group is the transfer station group. Do you want to talk about
our
last meeting briefly?
Yeah, we've just met once, and I've been kind of trying to synthesize ideas. But as far as action steps go, and so, you know, we call it transfer station, but really it's a drop-off site. And transfer station can be confusing because, you know, some counties have a transfer station where they bring all of their waste and they transfer it somewhere else.
Right.
We're just
Jackson
talking
County
about
County to Larimer County.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. We're just talking about a drop-off site. And so, you know, we've had some success with our community drop-off days, and so we recognize that there's a need mm-hmm. by how busy we are for those. One of the action steps that was already done is YVSC developed the recycling guide, where you can go online and type in plastic bag or oil, and it'll tell you where you can recycle that. YVSC has increased the drop-off event to 2 times per year instead of once per year. We're still doing household hazardous waste just once a year, but there's probably a need to increase that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to figure out a way that that could be funded and trying to work with the city to try to get them involved and help them pay for one of those events.
It's amazing how popular those are.
Yeah.
It's really
busy.
Cool to see that the community is so invested in sitting in line for 45 minutes and dropping.
And it's gotten a little better.
It's a little
You're not waiting quite that long, but still people call year-round asking when the next event's going to be. I mean,
I was at the electronics station last year, and I was blown away by how many people had TVs that they clearly had in their house for 30 years.
Totally.
I'm just blown away at the volume of electronics.
Totally.
It's amazing.
I know. And I thought it was going to let up, and it hasn't. So,
like, you'd think eventually everyone would recycle all their old TVs.
So I think that there's a need for, you know, I don't know if it's a permanent drop-off site, but maybe it's a drop-off site that's open 3 months of the year or Monday through Friday, or you know what I mean?
For all recyclables.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, for hard to recycle.
Hard to recycle. Yeah.
And
so kind of like a condensed version of the drop-off where you can recycle a lot of things in one location.
And so we would look at a dedicated drop-off facility somewhere. We have identified some property near the Humane Society that the city owns. And so we're, you know, what would it take to develop that area?
You mean where they haul the snow up that's making all the noise? You know, the neighbors can't sleep now?
Exactly, right.
Yeah, they're right there.
A little bit to the east of that, though. They're to the west.
Does the drop-off day pay for itself, or how is it funded?
No. So we get some funding. Well, actually, do you want to speak to that for the drop-off?
Well, I think, you know, part of our Rock County funding does help pay for it. And Cameron can speak a little bit more in specifics to the hauler fees. But you know, we do collect donations at the event, but that's kind of in the range of like $1,000 to $1,200, which is wonderful, but doesn't even, it's a drop in the bucket.
You mean what you're charging people per pound?
No, we don't get any of that money.
Oh, that goes to the
So the way that it works is the haulers charge for their services, and then we cover the transportation costs. And so that's how, you know, it's a little bit less expensive to recycle at the recycling drop-off event than it is to take it somewhere in the county, because in the county, you're paying the transportation fee, whereas the drop-off, we're taking that cost on.
We're meaning YDSC.
Yeah.
Subsidizes essentially the hauling fees. We also get lodging for all of the haulers.
The paint care program pays for all of the paint disposal.
Yeah, paint cares. But there's still costs for the county when it comes to
some of the household
hazardous waste. Yeah.
I guess my real question is, if you're talking about a long-term, you know, dedicated, and I'm sure you probably don't have the full answer to that yet, but just how do you make it pay for itself?
And that's the big challenge.
That's
what we have to figure out.
And I think part of that goes back to just that cultural, like, recycling is free, that, you know, that, and
it's
we
not
keep
free,
trying to educate people that it's not, but at the same time, we want to keep it affordable and subsidize where we can.
Yeah.
And trying to pull all of the material, all the waste that has value out.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
That makes sense.
And that might be different here than it is for somewhere else. We have to figure out what has value here and be able to be flexible to try to make some of these things work.
Right. So we just have 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Sorry to, I know
no
we
worries.
Keep getting you off task. Or maybe it's on task. I don't know.
I'll just briefly give you an idea of what the
and
education
we
want to group.
Have some time for these guys to ask questions.
So. Yeah, so I'm just going to tell you. The education and events group is looking at consistent signage as a way to help reduce contamination and curbside recycling. So that's what they're looking at.
Yeah. And so that would be something that we would try to pilot community-wide or pilot with a small group and then hopefully get signs. So everywhere you went in Rock County would be the
exact same signs.
And even as a household, the haulers would hopefully stick stickers on their bins. So you're just seeing the same stuff.
And that's been...
Yeah, sometimes it's a little frustrating to go to the green machine and, but
And that's been a really successful model in other communities for decreasing contamination rates. So.
And one of the things that Cameron mentioned is we're going to send Gina out with you and to talk to people.
Yeah, we're going to
do
a
that for a couple days
and residents.
Try to do a survey and try to educate people a little bit better and... You know, some people have expressed concern that, well, how much water am I wasting trying to rinse this plastic out? You know, and what you said, if it's 90% clean, then that's probably the amount of contamination that we can accept or that can be accepted.
Yeah. I was explaining that to Tim yesterday. so do you guys have questions that you want to?
Well, I just have a comment. I really like the way the report is organized. Like the way it's divided up into six clear areas, and I really like the action steps. So it's a nicely put together report, easy to read.
That's good.
Kind of
thanks.
Seems to be a useful document, especially if you actually do all the. We do all the things that you say we need to do. It'd be really great.
Yeah,
and I think picking one doable thing for 2019 per task force is a great. You know, hopefully that success will then build that momentum and let's keep going.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate all of your work on this. I mean, and all the people who obviously put a lot of time into doing this, because I think these are clearly priorities for a lot of people within our community, and it's not something that our environmental health department obviously is going to take on all by themselves. So I think it's great to have YBSC as a partner in this. Thank you. Let's let Commissioner Monger make his comments or questions first, and then we can take comments.
So, I guess, you know, I'm a recycler from way back just because I'm so cheap. But anyhow, I think I appreciate the report, and I don't agree with all of the content of it, and especially with the broader theory that, you know, recycling is going to save. And again, I had asked during the last presentation to have some science on the recycling and the hauling and the carbon footprint of all of that versus taking our stuff and putting it in a 700-year capacity at the dump, and how that carbon footprint measured out. I'm all right with that. And again, I agree that this is the new trend, and you know,
we like being trendy.
I'm going to get rolled over here. So, but anyway.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and there's a lot of people out there who, you know, based on their understanding, feel the same way. And so we have work to do to try to convince you and other people, you know. And so what we're really looking at is a linear economy versus a circular economy. And, you know, we also talk about landfill life. Well, you know, every module at the landfill has to be permitted and approved.
Right.
And so it's a complicated question to ask, how much life do we have at the landfill? We need to ask, is that the best use of that property, and are there better ways that we can be doing things? And so that's really what this is geared towards. It's just a guidance document, and we need to start asking these questions, and we need to start thinking about in the future, what does solid waste management look like in Rock County in 20 years? Things are going to change, you know, and our ability to do some of these things is limited based on the system that we have set up. And so it costs a lot of money to permit a new module in a landfill. And so, you know, when they get that EDOT done, we'll have a better idea of what the current life is, and it'll be more specific. Okay, so if we get Module 8 permitted, this will give us this many years. And you know, outside of Mod 8, they're going to have to look for different property, you know, adjacent property. So it's a complicated question. I mean, you could say 700 years. Certainly, there's enough space out there as long as it gets permitted and the agreements are in place and everything. I don't know if it's a great idea to, with the regulations the way they are today, to use those pre-law lands, because now you have to line a landfill, you have to do groundwater monitoring. It all started because it was a logical place to put stuff.
No, there was a big hole. All that too, Scott. Yeah.
I think though to Doug's point, I mean, the comment about recycling is not free. It's also not carbon free. I mean, and just for people to be able to understand what's the difference in the impact of recycling something or composting something versus putting it in the landfill. Mm-hmm. But it's not zero versus, you know, and
the other thing that, you know, and you, again, you guys have done a great job on here, and I really appreciate the investment that all you guys put into you, the time and brain damage that all that. But again, it concerns me, and I'm not that much of a consumer, but we're catering to the consumerism. Right. And that what really bothers me is we haven't gone back and say, hey, you know, if you're going to be environmental friendly, look at your own self, look in the mirror, and see how much environmental damage you're doing every time you go to Walmart, buy a new TV, and all those things that you're doing. And you know, buy on the plastic jugs and the rest so that we can recycle them and the rest. And so somehow the consumers, and again, I'm on my high horse here for a second, but somehow the consumers need to be educated, and we need to stop it at the source.
Absolutely.
Versus having to deal with it, you and us dealing with it.
Yeah, and that's actually going to say that to your point when you said recycling is not the answer. It's not the answer. Reduction is the answer. And so I think this is starting the conversation so that we can start having waste version be more, or you know, waste reduction really be more at the forefront of our minds, and hopefully, you know, start to create a cultural shift. But it is, reduction is the answer. And so it's not, you know, a lot of this plan is looking at recycling, but I think especially in the education group, like a lot of it is about reduction as well. So trying to, we do need to have an outlet for things to be recycled, but we also need to have a way to educate people on reducing.
Thank you.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
And we've seen some, for example, restaurants, you know, they're starting to use the paper straws instead of the plastic. The answer to recycling plastic probably isn't figuring out a way to pay for it. It's figuring out a way to reduce it.
Yeah. Right.
And so people aren't buying a case of water. Let's make sure that they have potable water on site and that they're using water bottles instead.
I agree with all that.
So the reduction in consumption, I mean, that makes sense.
And that's where, you know, the plan pairs nicely with the education and outreach that YBSC does. You know, this year has been a year of getting people to sign a plastics pledge of, you know, bringing your reusable water bottle, you know, shifting away from single-use plastics altogether. I think Cameron's right that, like, as we make progress on the plan, maybe some of these groups will shift to education and waste reduction. In the meantime, YDC is definitely, that's part of the waste diversion education and outreach that we do for sure in schools, in the community, with businesses. Cameron's been working a lot with businesses.
And so just to close, this might be the last time that you see Cameron because she's been accepted to graduate school.
Congratulations.
At Duke.
Yeah, thanks.
When do you go?
My last day at YBSC is May 31st.
And what will you be studying?
Environmental management and business.
And are you getting your doctorate, master's?
No, master's.
Congratulations. Thank you. We'll miss you. Who could possibly fill your shoes? Who knows as much about
me? She'll be back in 2 years when she's done with
this. It's the curse. It's the curse.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's the Udinian curse for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, guys. Yeah. We appreciate it. Catherine, would you like to make your friendly public comment?
Yes, my friendly comment. I wanted to really compliment Cameron and YBSC for the extraordinary, excellent community outreach, because there are so many stakeholders involved in this. This truly is a community plan. And I also want to thank the commissioners because, and this is even, you know, pre-Tim and Beth, but, you know, Doug and Tom and I have been working on, you know, waste diversion, gosh, for decades now. And so this is an exciting, taking it to that very next level. And I don't know, Cameron, if you brought any of your nice little cool little stickers, but I went to mention with Doug that we now have Yampa Valley Recycles is back. It's the messaging. Except for recycles, instead of an adjective, it is a verb.
It's an order. Yampa Valley Recycles.
So it is something
refresh.
That, and you have to be correct on the reuse. That's always part of the message. But this is an exciting next step. And also, Doug, I probably forgot to send you that Colorado State University study regarding the, you know, net carbon savings of shipping recycling. So
I would like to see that, too.
Yeah, I think that's what Sarah had that years ago, so I'll get that out to you. But get excited, and thank you, guys, and Yampa Valley Recycles.
Thanks, Catherine.
So we don't really need to take any action here? I mean,
we were just looking for feedback and hoping that you would be accepting of these initiatives and seems like you are. And
yeah,
of course,
that's the case.
And you indicated that continuing to give some updates as this project.
And I can do that as a part of my update or invite these guys.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time today and on this project.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Derek.
Yeah, thank you.
Come on up. What'd you say?
No snacks yet?
We're all right. You're the last thing, so we're okay. So it looks like the plan is to approve the budget first and then talk about the HR items. Is that right?
Either that or we talked yesterday in your work
just
session.
Just sort of do it
just having her provide some type of overall concept plan of what we're doing here,
yes,
and to be included in the record. For,
yeah, and then we can take each of the actions.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Okay.
Thanks, Lane.
So this is an overall plan to restructure the organization of my department. It comes to better suit the needs and the service that we're offering to the citizens. Within that restructure, I'm reclassifying two positions within my office to offer to more skill, a higher skill set for more qualified applicants. In order to do that, I have adjusted line items in my budget to encounter the expenses incurred, I guess. There was an error in one of the medical
allocations to one of my employees, so I'm using money from that to fund the temporary position to a full-time position. And then there's a little bit of leftover money that I would like to reallocate to an overtime budget.
Do you want to show Tim that? She showed us some arrows about that helped explain how these changes are taking place. And I thought that was helpful. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I think it's in your packet.
It didn't have the arrow part, though, I didn't think.
So the arrows show that the temporary admin 3 to a full-time admin 4.
A net addition of half an FTE.
Correct.
And the change to a full-time.
Change in the in the job descriptions.
Right.
So the other question, Lane or Kathy, so are all these job descriptions currently existing, or are we approving job descriptions too?
The job descriptions, you do not need to approve because
we have them already.
They're existing. Well, Tom approved them, so yeah. So
that's fine. Okay.
You're approving the costs that it will be for reclassifying them. Yeah.
Okay. And Lane, will you just? I know you talked about this a little bit yesterday, but just for the record, about the justification for moving from a temporary to a full-time.
So justifying that, I did a survey amongst other county treasurers within our state to see the numbers of tax statements they sent out to the employees that they have in their office, just to make sure that my request was in line with what was going on throughout the full state. And with that, I determined that with a class 4, I guess the Treasurer's Department is considered a Class 4 county in that legal description. So we would have 4 full-time employees in our office. There's tasks that are not getting done within my office that I would like to get done. I think it would be at the benefit of the citizens to have a full-service Treasurer's Office that offers them everything they deserve.
Agreed.
Thank you for taking the time to.
So we did talk about it a little bit yesterday, and you know, again, this is right. This is a increase of that half time to a full time.
We're adding half an FTE.
Adding half FTE.
We're really adding a full FTE because right now the half is temporary.
It was just budgeted through June.
It was supposed to be out with the ERP done, and so again, we had asked Lane, when she prepares her next year's budget, to include the continuing discussion of why that why that full-time is not a temporary thing with the ERP,
right,
and that it needs to stay on. And again, so.
Well, we appreciate what you've done in the short time you've been here, taking things on and getting things in order. It's really been given me a much higher sense of security than I may have had in the past about what's going on there. So which one of these do we want to do first?
And I guess I just want to reiterate that I'm not asking for a supplemental budget or asking for any more money. Is what I'm asking is to adjust the line items within my budget to allow for the reorganization and reclassification.
Which technically is still a supplemental budget, right?
Right.
Well, now.
No, it isn't.
It is because she's been able to do it within personnel, within
personnel line item.
Okay.
And we're agreeing to her thing, which is within the personnel budget that she has approved.
Because it's all within the personnel budget.
Well, only supplemental aspect is your approval of an additional half FTE for this year.
And the reclassification of both these, which is at a higher pay rate, pay scale.
That's correct.
On both of them.
But they don't require a supplemental request for funding.
Right.
Great. Thank you for that. So let's just go in the order that's on our agenda, which is starting.
So I'll just comment, too. I think we're on track here, and I agree with Lane's and Commissioner Corrigan's comments here, too. And, you know, I think this is adequate, and we want to make sure that the office performs. When you guys win, we all win. So we want to have that happen. So.
Yeah, and I think supporting what you need to do to keep this office going is what we need to do, right?
I appreciate your support.
Absolutely. So we can start with the budget, and we'll just take those in order.
Madam Chair, I move to approve the request to reallocate the treasurer's 2019 personnel budget.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And then we have a second item related to the deputy treasurer job reclassification.
And I don't know, we didn't ask Kathy if she had anything to say.
Yeah, Kathy, do you want to just make some comments on the reclassification?
No, I am fine with it. Tom and I both reviewed the updates to the job description, and we reviewed it to ensure that the minimum educational and experience requirements met the administrative four, because it's going from a 3 to a 4, and so we both reviewed it, and it does meet those requirements for that pay scale based on the additions that she made to the job description. So I think that one is fine. I also, when it comes to the admin four bookkeeper position going to an accountant position, Lane added a number of, she added a good portion of what is already in our existing accountant job description for the deputy accountant position. So from a pay standpoint, I think that it meets the criteria for being reclassified as an accountant following that pay scale.
And I think that you've indicated before that really this is the work they're already doing.
Yes, this isn't adding any new work. Yeah. They've already been doing these duties and tasks. It's just paying them equal to what other departments pay a person doing the same tasks.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the request to reclassify the Deputy Treasurer / Administrative Assistant 3 position to a Public Trustee Deputy Treasurer / Administrative Assistant 4 based on the information given to us.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And Madam Chair, I move that we approve the request to reclassify the bookkeeper / administrative assistant 5 position to an accountant in the treasurer's office.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you, guys. Right. Thank you for your support.
We'll adjourn the meeting.